Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a talk by Leo Biga, an Omaha freelance writer whose work appears regularly in The Reader and other publications. Mr. Biga is the author of Alexander Payne, His Journey in Film, A Reporter's Perspective, 1998 to 2012. Crossing Bridges, A Priest's Uplifting Life Among the Downtrodden, and Open Wide, Dr. Mark Manhart's Journey in Dentistry, Theater, Education, Family, and Life. He'll speak today about Omaha native, light welterweight boxing champion Terrence Bud Crawford, and his trips to Africa with Jamie Nolette, his fourth grade teacher at Skinner Magnet School. Miss Nolette is the founder and executive director of Pipeline Worldwide, a nonprofit organization working on sustainability and self-sufficiency in Uganda and Rwanda. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, July 21st, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Chris Allen, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Author, journalist, and blogger Leo Adam Biga, celebrates 32 years this year as an Omaha communications professional. The Omaha native is a holy name and University of Nebraska at Omaha graduate. He worked in public relations at UNO and the Joslin Art Museum before embarking on his freelance writing career. He's been a longtime contributing writer for The Reader, Omaha Magazine, Metro Magazine, and The New Horizons. His work has appeared in many other local, outstate, and statewide publications. He's also been published nationally. His work has been recognized by the Omaha Press Club, the Nebraska Press Association, and the American Jewish Press Association. As an author, his books include Alexander Payne, His Journey in Film, and Crossing Bridges, A Priest's Uplifting Life Among the Downtrodden. Both of these books are available here today, and he'll be selling and signing copies after the event. His topic today is a trip he made to Uganda and Rwanda, Africa, in June 2015 with Omaha's own world professional boxing champion, Terrence Crawford, whom Leo's been covering for some time now. And unfortunately, Terrence is not actually able to be here. He's training for a fight in a few days, actually. Leo applied for and won the Andy Award for International Journalism from UNO and found his travels with the champ and Pipeline Worldwide's Jamie Nolette. Today, he's sharing highlights of that experience in words. Leo's presentation will last about 20 to 30 minutes, and then we'll take questions. If you have questions, please write them on a piece of paper that we have available at each table. We'll come by and pick them up, and we'll ask them from the podium for the benefit of the radio audience. Please welcome Leo Adam Biga.
Hello. Very glad to be here. Glad to be able to share this experience. As I wrote in the stories that I completed that appeared in Metro Magazine and the Reader newspaper about the trip I made to Uganda and Rwanda with Terrence Crawford and Jamie Nolette, I never expected to have my first experience outside the United States in Africa, and certainly not in those two countries. And the reason I mention that is that I've been covering Terrence Bud Crawford for about 3 years now, fairly extensively. I've done at least a half dozen, stories on him, features. And I had heard from someone that he had traveled to those same countries, Uganda and Rwanda, in 2014. And he had never mentioned that to me. And I don't believe I'd ever seen any reference to it in any other reporting done about him. And so naturally that piqued my curiosity. So, you know, I found out that there was this figure in his life named Jamie Nolette, who was responsible essentially for that trip. And so some of you may already know this. And this was part of the new HBO documentary on Terrence Crawford, My Fight, which you have not seen, you definitely should see. It's done at a very high level, and it gives you some good insights into Terrence. So Jamie had taught Terrence at Skinner Magnet when he was in the fourth grade, and they had a nice bond established, and then they lost contact with each other. You know, Terrence, as we know, went on to a very successful amateur boxing career and now has risen to the elite ranks of professional prize fighters in the world. And Jamie had left education and had left her native Omaha at a certain point and co-founded and now directs an NGO called Pipeline Worldwide, which does, or I should say, it supports sustainability projects in countries, in developing countries, including Uganda and Rwanda. And she heard about Terrence's success in the ring. She reached out to him via social media, as the story goes. And, you know, they kind of caught up with each other. And naturally, he asked, you know, what are you doing these days? And he found out that she leads these trips to those countries in particular. And, you know, it's a way to raise awareness about the needs in those countries, which have to do with natural resources, you know, or you know, difficulty in accessing things that we take for granted here, such as, you know, clean water and a lot of other things, educational needs, right on down the line. And so he expressed great interest in traveling to those countries with her. And she made that happen, and it had an impact on him, as it would anyone, traveling to nations that had, you know, fairly recent histories, in one case of genocide, in the other case of civil war. Those countries are still very much dealing with the effects of those very hard experiences. And so he went with her on this trip in 2014. When I heard about all this, you know, it immediately, you know, told me that I should look into the possibility of going to Africa with them, because I heard that they were planning a new trip. And that was the trip in June 2015 that I eventually accompanied them on. And as Chris said in the introduction, it was the Andy Award from UNO that allowed me to get there. The trip wasn't about Terrence Crawford. My reason for going there was about him, certainly. I saw it as an opportunity to get deeper into his story as a person, you know, away from the boxing ring, away from all the trappings that attended. And it certainly served that purpose. I got to see him, you know, interacting with people of all kinds. I got to see basically his real love for youth, for children, his generosity. And so let me give you a few examples of how the trip worked, what we saw, what we did, and how that, you know, how Terrence's participation looked and felt. So basically the trip started in Kampala, Uganda. And there we saw, and we, I should say, we visited a whole number of programs, usually associated with some Christian church or organization, doing all these kinds of humanitarian good works. And they ranged from something called Bless a Child, which is set up to basically house children suffering from cancer. Also, their mothers are there with them. Something called Watoto, which is kind of a boys' town kind of operation. It's a lot of youth that have been abandoned or orphaned, who are cared for, who are educated, and they learn trades, and it has different campus residential type sites throughout Uganda. We visited something called Thread of Life. This is an organization that is there to support women coming out of the worst kinds of slums you can imagine. We visited briefly a couple of those slums. And these women are being given opportunities to get out of that environment potentially and to learn skills and trades that can, you know, make them, you know, have sustainable lives. And we visited St. Monica's, two different sites. This is run by a Catholic nun named Sister Rosemary, who has received international acclaim for her humanitarian work. And basically, St. Monica's serves young women, girls, many of whom were abducted during the Civil War in Uganda and who were forced into sex slavery, essentially, and, you know, bearing children at very young ages. In the aftermath of the Civil War, or even as those hostilities and conflict was ebbing or was ceasing, a lot of those girls and women, they had nowhere to return to. And so Sister Rosemary, like others, made it her mission to give these girls, these young women, an opportunity to reintegrate themselves back into normality. And so there's all sorts of programs set up as part of St. Monica's to support them in various ways. Again, they're educated. They receive opportunities to learn skills and trades and actually earn some money. And so, you know, as a group, there were seven of us in our travel party, all with Omaha ties, with the exception of one. You know, we all went together at any of these stops, at any of these sites. And, you know, like most Westerners traveling to these kinds of places, you know, we brought things, right? We brought things, jerseys, soccer balls, lots of other things. Terrence, actually, he and his girlfriend, they brought as many as 4 to 6 gigantic suitcases completely filled with things to give out to youth and children. And that happened from the beginning of the experience through the end of the experience. You know, I'm not sure if these children or youth, you know, knew that, you know, he was a world celebrity. Maybe some of them did. But he has a way of just interacting with young people, and they gravitate to him. And so there were lots of instances where, you know, he was playing with the youth, you know, whether it was with the soccer ball, whether he was shadow boxing with them, whether he was showing them some moves. A lot of that happened during the course of the experience. And, you know, he is a father of several children, and he's a family man. So I got to see firsthand this heart that he has. In his own way, he tries to make a difference, just as he does, you know, in his community here, Northeast Omaha, where, as I'm sure most of you by now know, he has a boxing gym, the B&B Boxing Academy, which he and his lead trainer, Brian Bomack McIntyre, purposefully, intentionally, you know, set in the very community that they were raised in and they came out of. And so the purpose of that academy is to help raise up young people. As the saying goes, to get them off the streets and to give them some coaching and mentoring. Whether they end up doing something in boxing or not, that's really not the point. It's about giving them structure and, you know, a positive kind of life-affirming experience. And so there's a lot of grand plans for that boxing gym. Jamie Nolette, the woman who leads these trips to Africa and is the director of Pipeline Worldwide. She works closely, actually, with Terrence. They have a fundraising campaign to renovate the building that the gym is housed in. And they're trying to raise, I think it's in excess of $1 million. And she's helping with that campaign. And so, you know, it has the potential to be a positive kind of anchor in that community. And that community can use as many of those as it can get. The experience was, you know, very concentrated. So we were on continent for 10 days. So between Uganda for about 6 of those days, maybe 7 of those days, and then Rwanda for 3 or 4 of those days. And so it was just going from city to town, town to city to village, from urban to rural and back again, visiting all these different sites. And we were meeting the people, you know, who are responsible for leading these various programs and organizations. And they're a mix of Native Africans and of Westerners, you know, and they all have a story about, you know, where they came from. They come from, in many cases, hardships themselves and why they do what they do. So we got to really firsthand feel and see their passion for this work. And so we met scores of people like this, of different ages. And so Terrence was right there, you know, soaking it all up. And sometimes he'd ask questions. He had been there previously. And so he had met some of these people before, but then he, on the second trip that I was on, he met a whole new round of people. It was clear that he had established some bonds from that first trip. So when I was there in 2015 with Terrence and Jamie and the others, it was clear that he and Sister Rosemary, for example, had really hit it off. And she's a very gregarious person anyway, so she kind of gets along with anyone. But it was, you know, they had some fun with each other, just kidding around. Basically it was us learning what the level and scale of need is wherever we went. And, you know, and the level and scale of need is vast. And so Pipeline Worldwide is there to assist, in the building of freshwater wells in villages, for example. It assists in other ways. At one of St. Monica's sites that we visited, there was a new girls' dormitory being dedicated. So we were there for this whole rather elaborate ceremony and dedication. And this was an example of Terrence, you know, finding a way to just to impact people and to connect with them. So we, as a group led by Jamie Nolet, acquired a huge amount of bedding and other materials to furnish out this dormitory. And so there in this bright shiny new space, we were there with the girls, you know, putting all these bunk beds together and then, you know, outfitting them with all the bedding that goes with it, et cetera, et cetera. And Terrence helped make it an even more kind of joyful occasion, where he put some music on one of his devices. And, you know, he was just kind of dancing a little bit, singing a little bit. And then he was kind of encouraging the girls, who were rather shy, to kind of join in. And at first they didn't, and then eventually they did. And it became this kind of beautiful thing, this beautiful human thing. You just kind of made the work go a little faster, and everybody was in really good spirits. And this went on for a long time. And then we were, treated to a beautiful dinner that the girls helped cook and serve. And then they performed for us, singing, dancing, et cetera. And all of this went on for hours. And it was one of those, it was kind of a, they were celebrating us and thanking us, specifically Jamie and Pipeline Worldwide, but also just us for kind of showing up. wherever we visited, any of these villages, any of these organizations, The people who do the work, the people who are receiving the services, they are so grateful just that you show interest, just that you showed up, just to show that people outside, you know, their own borders care about, you know, what they're facing. And this was true certainly in Rwanda as well. But before I get to Rwanda, I'll just add briefly, in Uganda, there was one portion of the trip that was dedicated to Terrence as the boxer. So Ugandans love boxing, and they've produced a lot of good boxers over the years, amateurs and professionals. And so they had arranged to have a meeting with all of us, Terrence, the center of attraction. We met all these national and regional sports ministry officials. And this meeting went on forever, and it was in very close quarters, and there must have been 20, 25 people in a room that really comfortably sat 12 or 10. But everybody wanted to be a part of this. He wanted to be around this world champion visiting their country. And this was in Kampala. And then the big event following this meeting, which was a private meeting, was a press conference held outdoors adjacent to a boxing gym. And there, you know, this was all given over to kind of feeding the visiting champion from America, and Terrence, you know, he's, you know, by now he's very used to handling himself in these situations. He's very good, and he was very gracious. He answered a lot of questions from the press, and. Basically, then he had kind of a piece to say, to share with all these boxing officials, sports officials, boxing coaches, and boxers. Many dozens of them had been gathered at this press conference. And he just basically kind of laid out a portion of his story, something along the lines of what you'll see in the HBO documentary. That he, you know, he comes from a hard place, and he's come up fighting from the get-go, and how, you know, he basically was talking to them about what it takes, the kind of dedication it takes, the kind of passion it takes to become successful at anything, and in this case, boxing. And so he just kind of laid it out for them that, you know, if you want it bad enough, you can do it. It doesn't matter where you're from. You know, he was giving them words of encouragement, and basically saying, "Hey, look at, you know, if I have been able to do what I've done, coming from where I came from, you know, your conditions might be a little harsher. Certainly, they are a little tougher, but you know, that doesn't need to stop you." And he was speaking really from the heart, and he was looking at people in the eye in the audience. And then after the press conference broke, you know, he signed a whole bunch of things. They came at him with everything possible to sign, boxing gloves and, you know, sweatshirts and everything. And he was very good about that. And then we went into the boxing gym, and, you know, he was kind of playing around with some of the guys, showing them some moves. And then he got one of his devices out, and he showed them some highlight reels, essentially, of his career. And at a certain point, he had like 20 of these young men, all of them boxers, some of them professional, I think mostly amateur, totally transfixed as he held in his hand the device. And I'm sure many of them had never seen him box before, and maybe some of them had. But, I mean, this went on, as I said, for a good 20 minutes, and they never, their eyes never left his device, just watching this man who was now in their midst, you know, practicing his craft at the highest level. And so, you know, who knows what difference, you know, his visit made and the connections that he made that day with these young men, some of whom he talked to kind of individually, but mostly in groups. But, you know, certainly they appreciated the fact, again, that he showed up, that he cared enough to show up. And the sports ministry officials made that very clear to him and that they want him back. If at all possible, they'd like to have him back. And who knows, you know, maybe he will return once again. So then on to Rwanda, very similar experiences. We were in Kigali. That's where we were based. We visited the genocide memorial and museum there, which is, again, there are really no words to express, you know, what that experience is like. But, you know, a very sobering experience, and it was, I think, a necessary thing for anyone probably to do to visit that country, to get at least some semblance of the horrors that went on. We visited some sites in rural areas where an organization called CARSA is doing some interesting work. It stands for Christian Action for Reconciliation and Social Assistance. And it's actually founded and run by our guide for the Rwanda part of the trip, Christoph. And by the way, our guide in Uganda, Apollo, also is a humanitarian worker himself. So in addition to, leading groups of visitors from the West, they actually do work. Humanitarian work, and is very, very, very important to them. In fact, Apollo is associated with an organization I mentioned earlier, Watoto, and so he works with a lot of youth. But back to Rwanda and Christoph and his CARSA organization. Specifically, Christoph and as others wanted to find ways to bridge the awful divide between those who were victimized during the genocide, who lost family, in many cases their entire family, and friends, and the perpetrators of that very violence. And so it actually works to try to bring together specifically people who survived the genocide and who suffered losses and the very perpetrators who committed those atrocities. And so, how well this works in reality, who knows? You can imagine. It's almost an impossible feat or task. But Christoph and the people that work for him and with him report some successes. And we met some people who have gone through formal and informal reconciliation process that they've set up. And they reported to us, as we sat, in their hut, that they have managed to find a peace with each other, even though they have every reason, even though the survivor has every reason to hate the perpetrator, and the perpetrator has probably every reason to want to avoid that survivor, but they live in the same village, they share a cow. This is part of a program under CARSA called Cows for Peace. The idea is that, they are they have mutual responsibility for something that gives them something. And these people are neighbors. And again, we can only go by what they told us. We obviously were only there a few hours. So, who knows what it looks like when there aren't visitors there. But at least the attempt is being made to bring together people for whom a wedge happened in their lives that would seemingly be impossible to bridge. But those efforts are being made. We visited a pygmy village. All of these experiences are, were impactful. This one, for the following reason, there was a young woman who spoke English fairly fluently, and you could tell she'd had some education. And again, she was so glad to have visitors present who, as she saw it, could potentially impact positively the village. And they have severe, because of the remoteness of the village, severe challenges with accessing clean water. And so they do have, there is a water, I'll say in quotation marks, a water system available, but let's just say it's highly unreliable. She knew of Christoph, who led us there, and the work that his organization does, and she knew of Jamie and Pipeline Worldwide's work. And so, she was just very eager to share the story of her village and the people and what they have to contend with and how much that they want and need, and all they're asking for is just a little assistance. And so by, even before we left the village, as we were walking back to our van, Jamie and Christoph were already conferring with each other, saying, we have to find a way to help this village. And I don't know the follow-up about that, but it would not surprise me that, you know, something has been done in the way of providing a more sustainable, reliable water supply, or those efforts are, you know, are in progress. And so that's what it was like. It was, you know, it was meeting children, it was meeting adults, it was meeting all these people who, on the one side of things, have severe needs and are passionate about the potential for people from the outside or even internally helping them. They just want their story told, or their stories told, essentially. And then there's the people who actually provide the services or attempt to provide the services, and their passion. It was a whole lot of passion that we were plugging into. And it was thrilling. It was exhausting because we were always on the run, always on the move. You know, and being there, seeing Terrence kind of taking it all in, you know, he has, just like all of us, he has a lot of different sides to him, some of which you might see publicly and some not so much, but, he can be very, very serious, and dour, and tight-lipped. And then he can be, very playful and gregarious. He has a silly side to him. But it was clear that, again, he was absorbing all of this. And I'm sure that the first trip to Africa, you know, impressed many things upon him, which he's talked to me about and others about, that, you know, the scale of need, again, is just so much more, it's so much higher there than what we in America are used to. And I think the first trip and the second trip, if anything, reinforced for him his desire to want to make a difference in his own community. Because, you know, the needs that are here, and I'm talking about Northeast Omaha, you know, are severe by American standards. And you know the statistics. But it's not about statistics. It's about people. And that's where a lot of times I think the necessary action stops. It's not a statistics thing. It's a human thing. And so I think it really has reinforced in him his desire to want to make a difference in his own community in the ways that he can. And he's certainly, you know, trying to do that, you know, in his own way. You know, the B&B Boxing Academy is just a tiny piece of a mosaic, right? But it is a piece. And, you know, he's now finding himself in a position ever more as his fights become bigger to make more of an impact potentially. I'm not that close to Terrence. I mean, I've interviewed him, you know, many times. I've interviewed all the people in his life and around him. But because of the nature of what I do as a freelancer, I only have limited opportunities to cover him because I have to have an assignment. And that's not always available. But be that as it may, you know, I remain interested in his story as a journalist, as a storyteller, and I know there's much more to come from him. I there are aspects of his life and his career that I look forward to exploring, you know, with more, in some cases, depth, and in other cases, more nuance. And this was a very, you know, positive experience for me personally and professionally, and it definitely gave me a heads up and seeing him in ways that really, you know, that close up, no other journalist has had an opportunity to see. If you're interested in, you know, knowing more details about the trips, you know, there are the two articles of length that I wrote, one for The Reader and one for Metro Magazine, and they're displayed there. You can find those articles on their websites and on my blog and on my Facebook page. And I'm sure there'll be more Terrence Crawford stories from me to come in the future because he's definitely the most, probably the most impactful sports figure from Nebraska to have come around in decades. And his impact is probably going to go far beyond sports eventually, if it already hasn't. So it's going to be fun to watch. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Leo. We have a couple of questions, and if you, if anybody has questions, just jot them down on the scrap of paper, and we'll ask them from up here. Could you talk a little bit about your accommodations while you were in Uganda and Africa and Rwanda?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really terribly interesting there. I mean, we stayed in nice places, so there was no hardship involved there. You know, but we stayed in. You know, I think there were a couple hotels that, you know, were of the four-star variety, even by American standards. Almost felt a little guilty actually staying in some of these places. They were so nice. But that's a common, I think, feeling that Americans have when they visit developing countries. You know, a lot of these places were kind of like on gated properties. But the interesting thing about all of that was that wherever we stayed, there was always the contrast, right? Just you can see it here in Omaha, for that matter, or any American city, much less having to go to Uganda or Rwanda. So we were staying in places of relative, you know, wealth, but we could see the slums or near slums within eyesight in some cases. And those contrasting perspectives were afforded to us so many times during our travels, where you would see, you know, great want and great wealth separated by a few hundred feet, and no more than a few blocks in many cases, or you know, a few hundred yards, and that's just the kind of the way it is. But there's nothing terribly unique about that because you can see the same thing right here.
What do you think, just from your travels, that Western culture can learn from African culture?
Yeah, I think it's the thing that, you know, Terrence has talked to me about and that Jamie has talked to me about and others. And that is, I guess, a sense of gratitude in one sense. That you know, it's hard for me to put this in words, but it's kind of an acceptance of maybe more having a more simple life. I mean, don't get me wrong, they want what we have, and they should. But there is a certain joy about, you know, living life and not being so consumed with material things. So they need lots of things, and they want lots of things, and that's perfectly natural. But they, at the same time, they have this kind of ability to look past that and to maybe focus on things that sometimes we find more challenging to do in the way that our society has evolved in Western culture. They, you know, really appreciate relationships. They really appreciate spending time with each other as friends and family and sitting down to meals together and just sharing whatever little they have. And so those are some values and qualities that I think sometimes get lost here. And so, yeah, we can learn those kinds of things from people in those kinds of settings, for sure.
Kind of a two- or three-part question. I'm going to ask it and let you answer each one. Do you know if Bud Crawford has any plans to return?
I don't.
Do you have any plans? Did you find any stories over there that are worth pitching and trying to do a story about so that you would return and write about it?
I mean, I wasn't thinking of it in those terms, and I really haven't thought about it in those terms since the trip. But certainly, yeah, I mean, in the vast notes that I took and interviews that I recorded, all sorts of great stories I could avail myself of potentially. The first that popped into my head would be just all the Westerners that we met, you know, who caught the vision, so to speak, of the needs in those places, and how they kind of left everything in the States or in Canada or wherever they come from, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and to kind of reinvent themselves and to start all over by doing what was essentially, I guess you'd call it mission work. Certainly humanitarian work. And so we met lots of those people, and they all have great stories along those lines. And I know that's true in developing countries all over the world. So that would be like the first place that I might start, especially if there are people that have Nebraska ties. For the kinds of publications I write for, that would be essential. There'd have to be a Nebraska, Omaha connection. But no, I haven't thought about that seriously. But I am planning to apply for the Andy Award again for an entirely different subject, actually involving this guy, Alexander Payne. So,
Pipeline Worldwide, I'm curious, how is that agency funded? Where does its money come from?
I'd have to go back to my notes to really answer that question accurately. I know that the trips, I can tell you this, the trips that Jamie leads, the people that go on these trips, you know, they're quite a range of people. So they're, in some cases, people very much she's looking to expose to the needs there and to the work going on because they have money or access to money. And so she sees them as potential, contributors, donors. In some cases, they're people who already have. And then they do fundraisers. And by the way, Terrence Crawford participates in some of these fundraisers. And so she has used him in that capacity, and he does it willingly, of course. And this is back where she lives in Arizona. But he also participated in a fundraiser right here in Omaha. So theirs is an ongoing relationship, and so she certainly does, you know, utilize, you know, his fame in that way. And so I have to assume, you know, that the funding comes from all those usual sources, but I believe she also talked to me about some grant funding. And that might even include some federal monies that they've been trying to access.
Well, you sort of answered my next question, and that was, even though you said you're not particularly close to Bud Crawford, do you get a feeling that this is sort of an ongoing interest of his, that he'll continue his interest in working on this or other projects in Africa?
First let me say this. So when I say I'm not close to Terrence, I get close to him as necessary when I'm working on a story on him. So, you know, Tony Boone at the Omaha World Herald, boxing is his beat. And so he covers Terrence and talks to him, you know, very frequently. And my assignments come infrequently. So there's that difference. So that being said, I don't know whether he has an interest, you know, specifically in returning to Africa. It wouldn't surprise me that he would go back with Jamie at some point. And Pipeline serves other countries besides Uganda and Rwanda. I believe other countries in Africa and places outside of Africa as well. But I think what I can speak to, you know, with some assurance is that, again, all of these experiences have reinforced the mission work, the humanitarian work he wants to do in his own community. I think for him, that is paramount. And so... that interest, I'm sure, is not going to abate. And it, certainly as long as he has his gym there. Now, that being said, if he starts making $100 million per fight, will he continue to live in Omaha full time? Will that change? My instinct tells me he will. I think he's as connected to this place in his own way as Alexander Payne is connected to this place in his way. I actually did a post. I do a lot of online stuff. I did a post a couple years ago equating Alexander Payne and Terrence Crawford, and there's more similarities than you might think. If you're only looking at things on a surface way, you may not see them so readily. But in terms of their loyalty to this place and the impact that they have in just getting the name of Omaha and Nebraska out there, and in a lot of other ways that may not be so obvious. So I'm sure that Terrence will always keep his heart here and will keep a presence here. And I'm pretty sure this will remain home for him.
When Terrence Crawford met with the press in Africa, what were they interested in? What were the questions that he got?
It was kind of typical stuff. I mean, I forget where the trip fell in terms of what fight he had just fought and what fight he had coming up. But, you know, they were asking him just kind of routine, typical, you know, questions about training and things of that nature. But I think a lot of the questions that were more meaningful to the audience there was, you know, what do you think of Uganda? what do you think of Kampala? What do you think of our fighters? Because it turned out, and Terrence said this during the course of the press conference and in the private meeting that preceded the conference, that Terrence is friends with native Ugandan fighters. And one of them, at a certain point, his team Crawford kind of took under its wing. And so he knows a couple of these guys who are national heroes there. They long ago left Uganda. But so he had, even before making the first trip there, already a connection to that place through these fellow fighters. And so believe me, anything that he said in answer to any of their questions or anything he said just, you know, independently that spoke to his enjoyment of, you know, the country, the city, the people, because he always talked about how friendly the people are. That perked up everybody's ears. And I mean, they wanted to hear that. They love that. And, you know, because this is a guy, you know, that they obviously look up to immensely. And I got the feeling, at least one of the sports ministry officials said, that, you know, they had not had a visit from a reigning world champion in like forever. So, I mean, this made major news there, you know, in the news cycle for a couple days. And don't get me wrong. I mean, Terrence Crawford then, now, is still doesn't have a name the way Muhammad Ali had a name, or even among lighter division fighters. You know, he's still not at the Manny Pacquiao level, right? Or the Floyd Mayweather level. But you know what? He's about this far from being there. And all it will take is beating someone of that stature. And it may not even take that. But he's about to be the most recognized sports figure from the state, in my opinion, since Bob Gibson was at the height of his powers with the St. Louis Cardinals, leading them to the World Series and winning Cy Young and MVP awards. So in a totally different sport, a totally different era, but I don't know of anyone that would even come close to where Terrence Crawford is at now and may be at soon, in terms of sport. All the great sports figures from Omaha and Nebraska, none of them really have reached this point. And so it's going to be, that's yet another thread of the story that's going to be interesting to follow.
You're going to get email. You've alluded a couple of times to Bud Crawford's dedication to Omaha, and you talked a little bit about the hardship of his early life. What can you tell us about his early life?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I can't tell you anything in much greater detail than, you know, what he's told a lot of other reporters. But, I mean, this is stuff I've written about in a lot of the stories, as others have, and what you'll see alluded to in the HBO documentary. So, you know, he comes from an environment and from a family and from a neighborhood where fighting was kind of a matter of course. It was a rite of passage. It was kind of something you couldn't avoid. But he also just, you know, as his mother says, he kind of came out of the womb that way, okay? I mean, as she says in the documentary, and, you know, as she's told me and a lot of other people, you know, he came out with his fist balled up. Now, he comes from a family of fighters. Terrence didn't actually even know this until Carl Washington took him under his wing at the CW Boxing Club. But he wasn't aware that his father had fought for Carl, that an uncle had fought, I believe, for Carl, and others in the family had fought, all as amateurs. And so it's a multi-generational thing. So it's in him, okay? It's in him the way other things are in us, okay? And it just is. You know, you can't debate it. You can't argue it. So it's part of his DNA, right, using a trite phrase. But it's very true. And then on top of that, now you add on the layers of the environment that he grew up in, which is, you know, a place where you kind of had to, as a rite of passage, you had to kind of prove yourself because you were always being tested. And he was an ornery little kid, and he was more than happy to accept whatever challenge. And so that was his growing up. And you even see it in the HBO documentary. I mean, his mom, you can kind of tell she knows how to fight. I think she's been in some fights in her life. Okay, so it's just part of who he is and what he is, and you know, and he comes from the hood. He comes from whatever you want to call it. Okay, and there's a dynamic there, and it just is. And I lived in the hood for a lot of years, so I know something about that dynamic. And so it was there every day to be dealt with, to be contended with. And, you know, he had an anger problem as a youth. There's no question about it. And that, by the way, that still comes out. I mean, I saw it on the Africa trip. He still has some issues with that. It can still be a challenge for him and for others, actually. I didn't really report on that, but it's part of who he is. And so I just chalked it up to that. Okay. That's who he is. It's something I might explore more deeply with him at some point, but we all have stuff like that, okay? And so, you know, boxing ultimately became his way of channeling all that stuff, right? The stuff from his environment, hard things that he saw, that he did, that were done to him, and to people in his life, friends, neighbors. And then, you know, so he found boxing as the channel, as the way to express this, right, in a way that's socially acceptable. You know, he found eventually the right people around him. I will say the favorite piece that I've written about Terrence to date are not so much the pieces based on the Africa trip as much as I enjoyed the trip and I enjoyed writing the pieces and reporting on it. It's the piece that I did for the New Horizons a few years ago about his relationship with Midge Miner, who you'll see in the HBO documentary. So Midge Miner goes back to essentially Terrence's first day in the boxing gym at the CW. And Terrence is a former amateur fighter here, and he's been coaching for years. And they are still close. And he's old enough to be his great-grandfather, or certainly his grandfather. But they have like a father-son relationship. And Midge has been there with him on this whole ride, even though they've had differences and they had kind of a trial separation or two in there. But, you know, ultimately he found the right people around him, Brian Bo McIntyre, Midge Miner, a whole host of others that are part of this Team Crawford camp. And so they knew what they had in him. And, you know, he has a lot of confidence in himself. And so it, at a certain point, it became a perfect marriage of them seeing his potential and him seeing it in himself. And others outside of Team Crawford telling him, like, you're the real deal. And so it's all come together for him. It's a beautiful thing that's kind of happened before our eyes. As some of you may know, for the first many of his professional fights, he never fought in Omaha. He only fought in Omaha as a professional for the first time in a world championship bout. All of his fights leading up to him having a crack at the title for the first time, which is when he went to Scotland, happened outside of Omaha. His last fight in Omaha before he fought a title fight here was in the National Golden Gloves. He lost a very controversial close decision. And that's reported on in the HBO documentary as well.
Thank you very much, Leo. Thank you for your insights today. I think your insights, your descriptions were wonderfully evocative and very, very interesting. So thank you again. I want to extend my thanks to Leo Adam Biga for today's Noon Press Club Forum, our thanks to the KIOS listening audience, and my thanks to all of you for being here today. We're adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a talk by Leo Biga, an Omaha freelance writer whose work appears regularly in The Reader and other publications. Mr. Biga is the author of Alexander Payne, His Journey in Film, A Reporter's Perspective, 1998 to 2012, Crossing Bridges, A Priest's Uplifting Life Among the Downtrodden, and Open Wide, Dr. Mark Manhart's Journey in Dentistry, Theater, Education, Family, and Life. He spoke today about Omaha native, light welterweight boxing champion Terrence Bud Crawford, and his trips to Africa with Jamie Nolette, his fourth-grade teacher at Skinner Magnet School. Miss Nolette is the founder and executive director of Pipeline Worldwide, a nonprofit organization working on sustainability and self-sufficiency in Uganda and Rwanda. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, July 21st, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be this Thursday, September 15th at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a debate on the upcoming vote on whether to reinstate the death penalty in Nebraska. The participants will be Colby Koash with Retain Adjust Nebraska, speaking in favor of retaining the Nebraska unicameral's recent action abolishing the death penalty in Nebraska, and Robert Evnen with Nebraskans for the Death Penalty, speaking in favor of repealing the legislature's recent action. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.